Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I have, honestly, one of the smartest human beings I've ever met, and I call him the professor, as everyone knows. Patrick Byrne is back with me. How you doing, my friend?
Well, oh, go on. I love your introduction. It was a little short, though. No, I'm kidding.
It's actually true.
Thank you for your role in the freedom movement.
Oh, well, you know, it's we have a good, close group of people that just keep getting up and getting out there and putting this first. And that's what we need to do. And we're attracting a lot more people, I think, than we even know it. And as time goes on, that is happening. And just before, I'm trying to do more shows with you because you're very positive about what's going on.
Oh my God.
You feel like we are heading in the right direction, and people need to have that attitude. If you have an attitude like nothing's going to change, or it's demoralized, or it's not going to change. So right now you're looking at what's going on with McCarthy, with the House, all of that. It's very positive.
Let me tell you something. Oh my gosh. It's such a surprise to hear that people are down. I'm going by the words of the great philosopher who said, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you get what you need.
Yes.
We got what we needed in the House. We got what we needed by getting the House and by getting McCarthy with a shock collar around his neck and a button in the hands of Jim Jordan. And about 20 people have the button. I think we're just fine. And, you know, it's basically Normandy. We got taken by surprise in our Pearl Harbor. And in this Pearl Harbor, it's lucky we didn't, you know, we even survived it, that we even got a second shot. We got a second shot. We're back in the game. We have Normandy. You know, we'll be closing on Berlin soon enough. I feel incredibly encouraged. There's, you know, these committees. I'll tell you, 4 years ago, there was a day in July of 2018 when I put everything together. When I was watching, I was in Atlantic City. I gave a speech. And that night, I was watching my YouTube clips, as usual. And I saw a bunch of guys, Peter Strzok and a bunch of names you now know, Priestap, right, blah, 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 talking to Congress, and it was clear what scoundrels they were. You remember that day?
Oh yeah, I've seen those clips over and over. I can't believe that a lot of them are still working in the government.
Yeah, well, I saw those clips, and after I was horrified, everything clicked together, and I realized I'm looking at the people who sent me these cockamamie instructions back in 2015, 2016. That's when I realized it that day, and I thought about. And this is the regret of my life. Any other time in my life, I would have just gone public. But I thought, my gosh, I'm sort of the one guy who has figured this out. For once in my life, I better play this straight within the guardrails and such.
Right.
Who do you go to? And I thought, well, since this is a national security matter, the House is the chamber closest to the people. And it's also where the Constitution puts the duty to declare war. And that's because, you know why they did that, Mel? Do you know why they did that? Because from an institutional design point of view, you don't want the aristocrats sending the sons of the farmers off to war.
Right.
You got to put it with the farmers. You got to put it with the people, the power to declare war. So I thought, gee, that's the most national security like thing. I'm going to go to them. And I brought them a great deal of information, and they have it all now. The good guys have it all, but they had it several years ago. They got stonewalled. So you'd be shocked when it comes out someday how much was known in some circles, but those Congress people got stonewalled. But that's not going to happen this time.
Right. And you see them on everybody spinning it in their totally controlled bogus media, but also, you know, you're seeing the usual suspects, Clyburn, Schiff, you know, Schumer, all coming out being like, well, they can choose to govern, or they can choose to investigate. I say can't go forward unless we, A and B
aren't. If these guys weren't hypocritical, they have no character trait that I can find other than hypocrisy. That's the only clear character trait. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, though, like, you know, and you've said many times, there have been so many crimes committed by these people and brushed under the rug, but be it financial, whatever you want to call it, corruption, that they want to just move on. Okay, let's just get through this. We'll steal 2024 and you guys And that's just not going to be allowed to happen this time, I don't
think. Yeah, we finally have something. We have the house with guts, with people who are going to dig into it. Right. I went to the house 4 years ago because that's the, at the end of the day, I mean, everything else was corrupt. Everything else, but at the end of the day, I thought, well, this is the people, and this is the people who are going to take back their government. They came up against a brick wall. And so it's 4 years later, it's a different mood in the country, different situation. That's not going to happen this time. They already have all my testimonies. They already have all my stuff.
And so, they have all the laptops and they have all the evidence from everything else sitting there somewhere. And one thing, though, I was watching you have a great show, and I was watching you the other night talking about the Twitter drops and an uncomfortable truth that people do not want to admit. And I understand, but I'm at a place where there is no right and left. There's no Republican and Democrat, and there's no hero or leader up there that we should all be bowing down to.
Absolutely. This is a people's movement.
Right. So the truth of the matter is, a lot of this criminality that the government was perpetrating upon the people, I see RFK Jr. is filing a lawsuit, rightly so, and some other people. We got Missouri and Louisiana, but Trump was president. He was. And are we still in a are we still in a place where, like Reagan, the buck stops here? Or are we, well, Trump didn't know, so, you know, he gets a pass on all of this. I don't know, but it is seeming like people are acting like, well, he didn't know, you know, he didn't have any power, just like with COVID. And it's like, are we going to, where's the honesty in the movement?
Well, I hear you, and I hear that layer, and there are times I feel that layer, especially on the COVID response. But on the other hand, I've got to peel it back one level deeper and tell you, since the day I showed up in DC, which was actually around October of 2020, and was around that administration, I was getting warnings by the honest people within it that you can't believe how dishonest this administration is, Patrick, and how everybody wants Trump out. Certainly once the election happened, everyone wants their bosses were telling them, get almost all, not all, but almost all were telling them, at least half, were telling them, get the president into transition mode. I sat with him for 4.5 hours, where 4 hours of it, he had his advisors, and he was getting terrible, terrible service, terrible advice. He got mad at them. And now this is, my transcript is out. And this is in there at one point that he got mad at them. I mean, what we were proposing was very simple, and it was not based on, have you had a chance? My transcript is now out there.
Well, I saw you talk about it.
Yeah. Well, you've seen, it's basically the same thing. You've no reason. It was, given the circumstances, something quite modest. The government itself had come out and said that the Iranians have an advanced persistent threat actor in the system trying to hack. Then they came out and said there had been success against one state. They were going against other states, and other nation states were joining in. Then and that was like October, November, then December 6th and 12th, they announced basically the whole world was hacked. 425 out of the Fortune 500 companies were hacked, along with Air Force, Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, CIA, NSA, but it was all hacked. It was all using the software. So based on that, and then based on the irregularities of Election Day, how about just picking out 6 counties to look at?
I know.
One machine in 6 counties. So that was all it was about. But I saw his own people. You know, I came to understand later that he didn't fully understand that that's all we were proposing. Because I found out on his last day in office that he called, or the day before his last day, he called in two of the younger people who had been very loyal to him, man and a woman, and in their 20s. And he had them walk him through my plan again. And evidently when he heard it, he said, "You're kidding. That's all it was? That's all Byrne wanted to do? Why didn't we do that?" Basically, he got terrible advice from his people. And he even said to them finally, "Why didn't you even tell me about these authorities, Pat Cipollone? You didn't even tell me about these authorities." He had the authority from the beginning to order just a quickie investigation. DHS, go in there, look at some hard drives, see if there was foreign access.
Right. Well, this
Wouldn't
is why
be
we
better
need...
than where we are now. Like knowing.
Yeah, but this is why we need full transparency. We need to kind of go back, though, Patrick. I have to tell you, What I've been saying to people when they do come at me with, well, Trump was the president, he should have known this, he should have known that, I say, they didn't want Trump to be president. And I mean, even the people supposedly on his team, on his side, look at the choices. He went through Mattis and Kelly and Priebus and all these people very early on. And, you know, you're thinking, and I think a lot of people thought, well, why is he surrounding himself with these people? But I think that he went in there thinking, once you're president, it's like becoming the CEO of a company, like what Musk is doing over at Twitter. And he'll go in there and they'll accept it. And then they'll start, you know, working for the best of his, making his plans happen. And I don't think that happened for 1 second.
Yeah, I think that his goose, from what I saw, his goose was cooked when he let them get to Mike Flynn. Mike Flynn, it has been one of the pleasures of my life working with Mike Flynn. I think of the history of Overstock as a history of collaboration between myself and sort of six or seven other people on this issue and that issue, one person. And it's really, I've had a half dozen really great collaborative relationships in my life. Working with Mike Flynn has just been, it's like getting to work with Steve Jobs. Yeah. He's brilliant. And you know what? It's so funny when I hear people say Patriots, like with a Y or something.
Oh, General I know.
General Flynn could have taken any rainmaker job on Wall Street and made millions of bucks a year. And instead, he was a key element of inspiring this patriotic movement. I've already been told that our movement is of greater consequence in history already than the hippie movement. Would you say that's fair?
I would say, and I think it's a lot bigger than people would even like to consider. And I think that it's huge. And the one thing is, I get upset a lot too. I mean, not upset at this point, and nothing upsets me.
That means a lot to me because I'm a hippie. So
right, I know you are. You're a real hippie. But I'll tell you, General Flynn, people that don't know this man have no idea how not only that he shows up everywhere and he talks to everyone and he shakes hands and he really cares, but that I think you're absolutely right. I think they took out Flynn to take out Trump, and that was that the real, the taking out of Flynn was really the beginning of the end.
It was Pence who did it and he let them do it. But that's a judgment call. And you're right. That was an unforced error. I know that the 45 is prickly about criticism and I try not to criticize publicly, but that was an unforced error. When I guess he thought that if he let them take out Flynn, that would appease them. He thought he was going to overwhelm them, pardon me, with his general Trumpiness. He didn't realize, you know, Barack Obama, President Obama, there's a thing called ram-spec in. Have I explained on your show what
ram-spec-in
is? Ram-specking in, it's named from two senators from like the 1940s, Ram and Speck or something. That it used to be that political appointees come into a place and then they serve their time. You know, the political appointees, they're like the commissars over different parts of the bureaucracy. And then you go on with your life. But if you ram-spec in, that is to say you burrow in, you take a job,
right,
a real job within the bureaucracy beneath you. That's real problematic because if you're talking about the FBI, for example, you're talking about agents, you know, who've been like cops and have worked their way up from the street. And and suddenly a guy was a political appointee because he went to Brown with a campaign assistant campaign manager and they studied John Rawls together. He's getting some political appointment and he's ends up burrowing into the bureaucracy and he's above the actual FBI street guys.
Right.
It's a really bad. It's that layer. And Barack Obama took the National Security Council and like his last week in office, he did something with 100 odd people that he ram-spec'd them into the bureaucracy. And
I mean, people have to understand that's what Ray is. He went to Andover. I know people who went there with him. He was born and bred to be in that level of the government. And now he sits there and he looks like this good guy. And I'm telling you, he came from that world. And, you know, I've had on a couple of the whistleblowers, FBI whistleblowers, and these guys were promoted from field office to this point, all worked their way up the FBI and were running the FBI. The FBI would be legitimate. It wouldn't be being used against political opponents, I don't think.
You know what happens? Well, that layer, if you really did the numbers, my sense of it is it's probably 2/3 Democrat, 1/3 Republican. And for some people, and I don't mean to turn my nose up at this, this is for some people getting into the bureaucracy and making 120 grand a year and having federal benefits and federal pension, that's wonderful. And they'll do that. And for some people, that just wouldn't be, you know, you want to serve your country for 4 years, 8 years, then you want to go on and you want to like maybe start a business or you want to do other things than that. And those, I would say, tend to be more Republican than Democrat. That's why there's a tilt towards the accumulation has skewed Democrat. But both sides are doing this and it's poisonous. You get the Hatfield and McCoys. You're just trying to be an FBI agent or something. And you got the Hatfield and McCoys over you.
Yeah.
You know, oddly enough, of all the agencies, the CIA is the one that is least captured that way. It only has two political appointments, just, you know, but it's there's a lot more out of the DOJ.
It's got a lot of its other own
problems. Probably.
But here's the thing also, because you grew up in that world, you know, you've been through all these you've been invited into all these groups and you went to these great schools and all of that, you know, you're primed for that. I think another problem, and I wonder if you think that this can ever be handled or solved, is the it appears to me in my reading and stuff that the think tanks like RAND and others, Atlantic Council, all those, and then Trilateral Commission, and then on the other side, the lobbyists have a lot more power than any elected official in D.C. And I don't see why we're allowing that to continue over and over. I mean, until that. I don't know, some people call it senior executive service or, you know, this higher level in DC, but as long as that's happening, how much do our elections change anything if the real people running the country are behind the scenes?
Well, that is a good point. You know, I'm on the Council on Foreign Relations, as has been disclosed. It's normally something
I know.
Say publicly, but I know everybody in your audience.
Well, you get invited into that, right?
Yeah, I got invited. I'm actually from that world in a way. My family lived, I would say, the Horatio Alger dream.
And I know.
I kind of didn't start off in that world, but I ended up in that world. I haven't been active in the council for 15 years, and one is not supposed to speak about it. But the particulars of anything, what I saw was, I would say, the remains of something, of something that must have once been valuable. When it started 100 years before, what it was supposed to be was not a backroom boys kind of, you know, bunch of guys conspiring over a sack of gold or something, but it was, if you do everything out in the open, you end up getting, look at C-SPAN. C-SPAN's, you know, I love watching Congress. And I think that what just happened with McCarthy is very healthy. I think it's terrific.
So do I. Yeah.
You know, they've tried to make it look like it should be embarrassing. It's not embarrassing. That's what democracy looks like. People just took the power back. I wish we, that's what it looks like. So but sometimes on normal days, if you watch C-SPAN, you see senators and congressmen doing a bunch of posturing. Just a bunch of posturing, right? It was kind of hard to get anything done. And so the council originally was a opportunity to bring together older and more seasoned people, maybe with some people younger within the government, but who were stellar, were having stellar careers and working on some problems together. Anyway, and it gave a place for Democrats and Republicans to do this behind closed doors. And they were, that was the original purpose of it. And so, I saw it work on and be part of a couple very important peace things that happened. I'll come back someday, I'll tell you. But it's, in general, what happened is a lot of it, not the council to my knowledge, but other think tanks have become quite captured by foreign interests.
Right.
And you know, our founding fathers did two things. They knew that we were susceptible to being captured by foreign interests. And that's why they made this very odd in the Constitution, the requirement to be president. There's this one request that's quite out of tune with everything else, because naturalized citizens are equal in every other way, only they didn't want it in the to be in the president's role. But the other thing in the Constitution that's a bit odd, it's the one profession that is protected constitutionally is being a lobbyist. It's in the First Amendment. People have the right to petition their government for redress of grievance. Peaceably.
Yeah. Well, we don't usually look at it like
it's the only constitutionally protected job.
Wow. Well, I guess that's why. But again, the biggest problem, which I've looked at looking at some of these think tanks, Brookings, Center for American Progress, a bunch of them that are 501c4s, don't have to tell you where their money's coming from. Which
some
is,
of them are getting huge amounts of Saudi money and huge amounts of Chinese money.
Qatar. You know, the whole UAE. Yeah, but also, China, whatever. And that should be fully disclosed. I think all of it should be disclosed at this point. A lot of people are up in arms about this coming, and we've talked about it, and I don't know how much you think that it's what I think it is, but I just think it's a symbol of a bigger problem, multinational corporations and banks pushing this global governance idea. I really think it's all about money and transfer of money and wealth to a small group of people, but
that's just what's happening. You know, that's just what's happening. There was a sociologist in Argentina who wrote about the collapse in 97, and he wrote a very interesting article about it, saying, my friends want to know what it was like. I was a 24-year-old graduate student, and one day Argentina was a normal modern country with, say, out of 10 people, one rich guy, one poor guy, and then eight people in various stages of middle class, but acceptable middle class. And then there was the banks were closed for a week, and there was all this mayhem. And when they opened up, there was one rich guy and nine poor people. Well, they want to engineer that collapse so it happens. So they're the rich class. They're just like the CCP is 6% of the population, but it really it's if you're good, you're if you're a CCP in China, you're good. They want to engineer that kind of Hunger Games world.
Right.
Or they see it collapsing. We are going to collapse. The financial system is going to collapse. We're in a 100-year debt cycle. And they want to emerge from the collapse in some kind of Hunger Games, Cloward Piven socialism.
Yeah. And this event coming up in 2 weeks is their biggest ever. I'm not thrilled that a bunch of our intelligence, biggest intelligence, Ray, Haynes, Power, you know, a whole bunch of people are going from our nation to the big Davos technocracy prom, but they are going, and that's fine. But a lot of people are looking at this, and as much as I don't want to be, you know, conspiratorial, you really do have to look at a lot of their plans. But the one thing that I wanted to ask you about, which I found because I keep an eye on these people, and it's not just the World Economic Forum, they're just the front man. He Schwab likes attention, I think, and Harari, but it's all of it. It's World Economic Forum, but it's also World Health Organization, UN, World Wildlife Fund. I mean, they all kind of connect in their messaging if you look at their own websites. But they just announced something in Montreal about this 30 by 2030. They want this group of people want to control 30% of the Earth's surface by 2030, part of Agenda 2030. And that brings in something that they've proposed. Bloomberg's in on it and other people too. Called the natural asset class, a new class, kind of a Wall Street for natural resources. Have you heard anything about this? And how does one get to decide that this is the future? It seems to me like a new way for them to control all the money, but making it this time through natural resources. I don't know.
Well, I hate to tell you, it's kind of funny. If you look up my name, Google my name and Wired. Are you near a computer? Google this now.
Google you and what?
My name and Wired.
Okay.
The word Wired. Okay. And then hit a story comes up like meet Patrick Byrne. Pull that up.
Oh, great. Well, Wired is pretty left wing as well. So, there it is. Meet Patrick Byrne.
Read the whole title. What does it say?
Bitcoin Messiah, CEO of Overstock. Scourge of Wall Street. Oh, is that you? I don't know that guy. I never met him.
I'm kind of the blockchain messiah 10 years ago. So I said that you could rebuild a lot of institutions in society on the blockchain. The most exciting thing about Bitcoin isn't Bitcoin. It's this thing called blockchain. You could recreate a bunch of institutions of society. And there would not be any corruption if you did this, because what we have learned is that man is corruptible. Every institution is corruptible. But if you build it on math and cryptography and the rules get turned into algorithms that are cryptographically protected, then there's no way for the elites to cheat. That was my dream. And I'll tell you something, no reason I can't say this publicly, but in 2015, I think it was, maybe 2016, I was asked to give a talk at the Treasury about it, about this, and how you could rebuild everything on blockchain. I'm the inventor. I know everybody's freaking out about central bank digital currency. I'm the inventor. Look, myself and a guy named Gabriel Abed, we did it first in Barbados. I was part of saying, let's take all these processes and turn them to blockchain. I was saying, and I explained to the Treasury in this wonderful luncheon they threw about how that could be done. And let's get ahead of the Chinese. And we will have this system that is pure and impossible to corrupt,
right,
and guarantees liberty and the American way of life. And I mean, like, you could rebuild all of our current institutions within blockchain and they'd become uncorruptible, including our central bank. It didn't. And I was arguing, well, this has to get done before the Chinese get these things. And I'd been over in China and seen what they've been doing. They were right on my heels. And they said they got it. And I think what they did, so I kept on going about my work, and what they did was they stopped me. Did you know that the SEC started an investigation against me in early 2019?
Yeah, but I think that was in retaliation for the Hillary Clinton stuff, yeah, right?
It was Peter Strzok's wife. It was Peter Strzok's wife. So they
make it up.
They basically stopped me and have let our developing stuff that I think is the authoritarian version. I was in there saying, hey, let us, an American company, build this stuff. We'll get everything built. Is a hot swap, I called it, a warm standby. Using tech languages, you have a warm standby. So your production server is like running the website, but you have one that's your backup and it's warm. It's like running and sticking up. And if this one fails, you do a hot swap. You don't even shut the website down. So I was saying, let me build all these things and keep the Goldman Sachs out of my way, and we'll get all this stuff done.
Right.
And we won't have authoritarian Chinese or an authoritarian version of blockchain show up. And instead, what seems to be happening is they want to introduce all this stuff like a central bank digital currency, but they want the authoritarian model. Right. You know, the model where they get to say, well, we like you and we like you, but we don't like you, so your money doesn't count today.
Right. Well, it's because it's programmable and they would control it. But I don't know. I think that's going to fail. But the other thing that's funny about you telling the story is that before my YouTube got taken down and all my videos gone, I did a show on John Perry Barlow. Do you know who that is?
I knew him.
Did? I wish I knew him. I read like tons of stuff. He seemed like a great guy. But I got to tell, and I think they took him out. I'm sorry to say it. Everyone seems very suspect at this point to me. But I have to tell you, he did something I think very similar to you, where he went, I think he spoke at the World Economic Forum about keeping cyberspace truly free. And that there should be a Bill of Rights about cyberspace and nobody should own it. And nobody should claim, this was his speech. And what, in a couple of the articles I read, it looked like that the powers that be were like, uh-oh, we got to do what he's saying, we got to do, but we got to control it, you know?
The opposite, probably. Yeah, right. I spoke to Davos once. Davos once had a blockchain track, and they had me go over and speak at just before the big dinner, the big final dinner.
Yeah.
And I told them too how blockchain could remake the world in this more egalitarian way. But what that meant was there's a whole bunch of people who make their money off of grifts, one form of grift or another. And those ways get sealed up. We get to end corruption. Boy, what a dumb thing that was for me to warn them off.
Right. But I was reading this whole thing about Barlow, even his interviews after, where he was like, I think I told them that they needed to do something. And I was saying the opposite for the people and freedom. And they were saying, well, we can't let that happen. I mean, that's what it seemed like he was saying.
He was the Thomas Jefferson of the internet. They say he was also the Grateful Dead songwriter.
I know.
He did something stupid after 9/11. He did something I thought was disrespectful, and a bunch of people, including myself, distanced ourselves from him. But he did one really stupid thing. But other than that,
I don't know about that. All I know is about that he was trying to say something that was important about keeping the internet free. I think he has, and it was like turned around completely from what he was saying. And then, but now we have a situation that we must discuss, which is You were talking about the Twitter drops. I look at Elon Musk as a lot more. I know everyone's holding him up as some kind of like white knight that's saving free speech. I don't see him like that at all. But I see him as he's doing a lot of good. But I still think he's got a lot of other stuff going on with the Department of Defense and with transhumanism and AI. What he's doing now is great. But the one thing that I am looking at is OpenAI. And the GPT, I've been looking at those GPT-3, 4s, all of them. I'm sure they're to 20 by now in reality. But this new chatbot that they put out, so I was looking into this. This is a very woke chatbot. It literally tells you that, like, if you said, I had a friend that sent me something of, like, looking up, like, crime statistics. And it's like, that's not true. You know, and it's like, it is true. I'm looking at the, like, it's. These AIs that are these chatbots that are gathering information, if they're gathering information from, you know, newspeak sources, do we have a plan to have these kind of chatbots that are not woke and being, you know, programmed by Google? I'm very concerned about the woke chatbot.
Well, I was using chatbots when they got introduced a decade ago at Overstock. I never thought of that. It's a, it is a problem, you know. So I'm hoping somebody can get that. It is a problem. What's coming out, what to me, what's coming out from Elon Musk, I think he's a good guy. He may be, you know, we need to have research in AI because China's having research in AI. And
right, I agree.
So we need to have private enterprise involved in this stuff. And we need, seems to me, Elon Musk is very attuned to the principles of our republic. And when he defends himself, it's by the principles. And I love it. It's kind of funny that an immigrant would, or not so funny, that an immigrant would know, understand us better than many who were raised here. What the Twitter files are showing to me is Lord Acton's, the truth in Lord Acton's phrase. Now, Lord Acton was a guy, he was a British lord, the eighth Montesquieu of, you know, some Suffolk or something. I don't know. But it wasn't, it's kind of funny. It wasn't really notable for much other than a line he wrote in a letter to a friend that got famous. And the line was, why don't you say it?
You can say it, but I will tell you, if you look up quotes, that is what he's famous for, quotes.
Yeah.
He'd say the quote because I'll say it wrong like usual.
The
you say it right.
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, it's really the story told by the Lord of the Rings. Remember, the ring of power is everyone, even each of the different types of being, the dwarves, the elves, the humans can't be trusted. If they're given a chance at absolute power, no matter how pure they are, even what's the hero's name? He doesn't trust himself with it. They pick the lowliest, humble creature, a hobbit, to take it and carry it across the volcano of doom or whatever. And send it in. That's because everyone is corrupted, even by power, even the heroic. So, and that's what Google's motto used to be, like, don't be evil. They ended that in 2015 and started being evil. What's coming out from Twitter is going to turn out to be, it's all the same with Google and Amazon and these companies that used to be, you know, Apple used to be, remember the famous 1984?
Yeah. I worked for the guy who created that in one of my early jobs at Ogilvy and Mather. That was the only ad forever for that.
So that was brilliant. That was brilliant. And now that has become a member of the 1984 society. Real corruption. And I guess people were held out. Who knows what promises were held out or what they were told. Boy, they sure seem to have gone along with evil.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. I think also Elon Musk has a ton of kids. He seems to really love his kids. And this is what I say about Donald Trump with his kids and grandkids. These men do actually want good futures for their own children and see the dangers out there and I think are doing the right thing from what they believe they can do for humanity from where they are. The thing about Elon Musk is I'm not a huge fan of Neuralink or any of that stuff, though I know it's coming. It just seems to me, if used for good, Like, let's say that you can make people's limbs after they come back from war work again. Well, hello, that's awesome. If all that stuff, I think when it gets into the hands of people that are inherently evil or aren't fans of God or humanity, you get into a slippery slope. But I do
when
like
it becomes mandatory. Doing. You got something to worry about, like a vaccine.
Right, anything that's the truth.
Mandatory.
Yeah, but it was in. I mean, there's that Russo documentary with Rockefeller from the 90s, 94, I think it was, where he's saying he wanted that they should microchip every human, you know, to control behavior and you know, moderation and stuff.
You know, so, you know, the word that you never see these people use is consent. Consent.
Oh, never.
No one ever can. Consent is not something in their perfect utopian world they want to bring about. Consent does not play a factor, and it does not play a factor in getting us from here to there. They do not ask our consent. The European Union was not created by consent. No, the people themselves never voted. Wherever there's been a referendum, it's been voted down. Somehow it has turned into this bureaucracy that ate Europe, and now it's coming for us.
Right. Well, all of the executive orders that Joe Biden keeps putting out, you know, he's going to veto everything that these guys put up. These aren't consent. This is supposed to be consent of the governed. That's why that was in there. And from the
atomic
what I'm talking
concept.
Right. That's and what I'm talking about with the AI, you should probably look into this and get involved. But what I saw in a executive order, I'm not a fan at all of Eric Schmidt. Just because of what I see, what he's doing in the background with Schmidt Futures and the technology, AI, Department of Defense, a lot of stuff he's doing, what he did in China. I'm just judging by what I'm reading. And I don't like this kind of overreach. But
I had lunch with him once.
He is writing the AI Bill of Rights for the Biden and Harris administration. I read it a document the other day. I don't think that he should have that ability. I don't think somebody that's so financially invested and has done so much with surveillance and Google and everything, who should be writing that? Somebody's got to do it.
It should be all transparent. It should be all transparent, and there should be popular input into it. You know, when we create rules, there's something called the Administrative Procedures Act of 1971, I think,
right,
that when a regulatory body creates a new rule, they have to propose it to the public. They explain in writing why they want to change the rule. And then they propose it to the public. The public has 60 days to comment. They review for 30 days. They propose it. There's this whole back and forth with the public where they have to account for themselves. And there's a written record of it all. That's how something like this, anything like this should be done.
Yeah, but the public isn't doing that. And the public could, because now we have so many tools that you actually could do it. And I think that that's where I want to go next, because we can't let go of election integrity. You and I know that the next election cycle has already started. You guys put up on America Project a very compelling documentary type thing about stuff going on in Pennsylvania that I don't know how, or that Ruby Freeman, who we saw pulling out the things, gets a congressional medal. I mean, we are dealing with upside down times, but
it's just to thumb you in the eye. It's bizarre world.
I know.
Bizarre world.
But what should we be doing? Let's just jump back before I let you go to what should we be doing about election integrity? Are there, you know, where are we in that? I don't think we can let that go. It's
first,
already started.
Are you kidding?
Right.
It isn't let go at all. 2022 isn't over. Carrie Lake is still in the game. Let me tell you something. On there's an appellate hearing on the 24th. Now, the Supreme Court of Arizona turned down hearing the case, not on the merits, but on the grounds that there already was an accelerated schedule to the appellate court. So the appellate court is hearing things the 24th. Between now and the 23rd, there's a variety of new information that is explosive, mind-popping, mind-boggling, that will be released. I don't know if it's all on the 23rd, but it will be part of the public record between now and then. And it came out of the great grassroots work. It's all these hundreds of grassroots people. You know, this is why this isn't going to work in America where it would in Germany or France, anywhere else. We have too many, it's too decentralized. Grassroots people did all kinds of Freedom of Information Act kind of requests, got all kinds of information. It was all stitched together. Wait until you see what they have. Oh my gosh, this has a straight shot to the Supreme Court. If the appellate court doesn't do the right thing, this is a straight shot to SCOTUS. It's massive civil rights violations. Claims are provable now.
So yeah, we need that.
They're stumped. So Kerry Lake is not out of this by any means.
Good. And as for you, you've tried to, you still are working on it. You have America Project, and you've put together different groups all over the country. I think we really have to go back to really focusing, as we have for the last 3 years, 2.5 years, on what people should be doing locally, where they should be getting involved, that there has to be, we have to be aligned in the idea that, and it can't be left or right, Republican, Democrat, right. None of that BS. It has to be truth, right. Transparency is the key.
We are the reality movement. We're the truth movement. That's, I think it was that this way. There's a couple wonderful women in Florida, BLM activists. And one of them I talked to, did you meet her at our?
Yes, they were at the event I went to with you in West Palm.
And they're great. And they say, and one of them said, look, we had BLM events. We're peace. Nothing ever happened. We had demonstrations, never any violence. And we're finding common ground with BLM, which doesn't surprise me. We also find a lot of common ground with BLM when it comes to vaccines, because a lot of Black people remember something called the Tuskegee experiment.
I know.
Remember that one?
Yeah, of course.
So it's not such a conspiracy theory to them, the idea the government an announcement coming. I'm speaking in 10 days in Nashville, Tennessee. I have an announcement about something the American
Project. Oh, I'll be there. I hope they're not putting me and going after you again. Last time I was like, do I have to follow Patrick Byrne? Come on.
Did you follow me?
I did last event.
I hope I warmed the crowd up. That was your super
entertaining one where you had the clips of Witness and we went for it. And they still don't want to go after you, which I love. I love that you're like Teflon for some reason on their side.
Well, I'm for now. Or alhamdulillah. I think that it's all going to, I like to think that I'm basically the one shot. I think I'm the one person on this side who is still preaching forgiveness and compassion, and we're going to have truth and reconciliation and move on. I'm not finding a lot of hallelujahs on that, but for us to get past what's happened here, we're not going to have a civil war. We're not going to hang 50,000 people. We're going to expose that's why I showed that the power of witness. General Flynn always loves to talk about the power of prayer. I think the power of witness is amazing. Knowing the truth. I understand that a great deal of the government's on our side just because they know the truth. Everybody knows the truth now.
Everyone does know the truth. And the truth at the end of the day, as we know, always wins. But I will tell you, Patrick, at your last event that I was at, and I will go show up at any event that you do, we did have Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians and people not involved. And I did I keep telling people I got invited to do a roundtable. It was me, a true Marxist, a Libertarian, a straight up like progressive liberal, and me. And at the end of the entire thing, we all agreed on certain things, including what you talk about, which is that all of our elections should be free, fair, transparent, and people should have receipts of what they did so that they can say, no, this is how I voted. Or my mom didn't vote that way because she's not alive anymore. Get rid of that one. But everyone agreed that our election system is the one thing we can all meet in the middle on. So
We're all going to be under a tyranny.
Right.
If we don't get this straight.
Right. Nobody's going to be marching in the streets. Nobody's going to be
protesting. But I feel really good. Listen, we have the House. We got Jim Jordan. We got people who are really interested in the truth. And they have the Constitution is set up so the House has a lot of power.
Right.
Over time, what has happened is our constitutional design has gotten sort of stretched out of balance by an imperial presidency. And it happened because of World War II and the national security state that emerged. But the House has all the right within the Constitution to flex its muscle and take back lost ground. And this is how it's beautiful to me. This is how the American people are going to take back our government.
I agree.
I went there 4 years ago asking for some help, but it was too weak and they didn't know what to do. There's 20 people there who want to lead the charge. And I'm sleeping better than I've slept in 17 years.
Oh, great. And I will tell you, it's got to be also we the people, which is why what you're doing with America Project and going around the country, we the people have to also take this seriously. That's our government. They work for us and we got to back the people that want the truth.
It all starts with we the people. That's the atomic concept. We're the atoms. we the people, and then we consent among ourselves to form this corporation that we call government in order to do some things that we can't do individually. Or that's the basic mindset, when always that's the great spark that brought this country alive, and they want to snuff that out. So we the people, we're doing an event in Phoenix on January 28th. That's called a Border 911 event. Right. So we did our Reawaken America stuff. I'll still be speaking there next week. But we're doing America Project, doing a Border 911 event in Phoenix. We'll be doing others in other states where we're bringing out, look, this is not, you know, we have immigrants to speak. We have Hispanic people speaking, explaining.
Of course.
You know, this isn't explaining the reality rather than the fantasy.
Well, that's how we do it. We find common ground among American citizens that are proud and want our country to be the best it can be, and want the best future for our children and future generations. And this is how we do it. So, Patrick Byrne, thanks for leading the charge. I will show up at anywhere you are. We will see each other next week in Nashville. I miss you between that. So anyone that wants to see Patrick and I in Nashville, you can go to themelkayshow.com. It'll take you right to where you can name your price, and you can come meet us and see us down there. And I will see you on the road. Patrick Byrne, tell everyone where they can find you. I highly recommend you follow Patrick Byrne because he tells the truth like it is, like nobody else. And he's very entertaining.
Why, thank you, Mel. You can follow me at locals.com. Join my community. It's free. You don't have to pay. We love people who join the America Project, especially if you can pony up $5 a month. We're developing it's not having to be all out of my pocket anymore. That's nice. I'm trying to make something freestanding. Should a bus run me over? Anyway, joining the America Project, join me at Locals, or I'm now live at Twitter.
Oh, and I great. Use
that as my news feed.
Are you back on Twitter, or you're new to Twitter?
No, I'm back on Twitter. I've got 225,000.
I haven't been put back on yet. I gotta go. I'm on in a covert way at Mel K Show, but not the Mel K Show. It's not back yet, but someday. But anyway, well, that's great
January
to know.
6th. January 6th, he turned me back on. So I like nice. You.
Well, you're back causing trouble. No, Patrick Byrne, you've been a real help to this country, and people might not know it yet, but the America Project's going to be a big deal. So you don't join the America Project to feed the funnel. You join the America Project to say you're in. And the America Project's going to be making big moves, and I will be along with you guys as well. Thank you so much, sir.
Maybe I'll do a speech about what the America Project has done. People really don't quite know all the things we've been part of.
But here's the thing. We can also say the America Project is a community that you can be a part of. So that's the biggest part. We want everyone to come under the same umbrella, and I'm very proud to be involved as well.
And that is the nature of my announcement at Nashville.
Great.
Has to do with a community being brought for all freedom-loving Americans. It's not a make-money community. It's nothing like that. A place, an uncancelable place. We're excited about it.
I'm excited too. And I will see you down there, sir. Thank you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.